The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-room-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hello.
Hello there.
How's it going?
Oh, well, cheery.
Cheery in the holiday spirit.
Yes, indeedy. With all due respect, it's definitely, I have decorated every room, including my bathrooms, in the holiday spirit and outside, so I feel I am truly ready for it.
Well, that's good.
Yes.
That's good. And you won't even be here.
That's true.
For the official
holiday season, yes, for that. I will be. Well, I figured if nothing else, after the few weeks that I'm here and then I come back, I can enjoy it. And then, obviously, the young lady who's going to be taking care of my animals will be able to enjoy it, too. And
nice.
My animals will be, too, so I figure it's not just for me.
Well, that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a little holiday sprucing at the house. We got our tree and we put lights outside and then we sat down and we were watching something on television and a fuse blew.
Oh.
And so we went outside to you know, flip the fuse. It happens every once in a while, you know.
Uh-huh.
We have an older house and blah blah. So we come back in and all of the Christmas lights are dead. So I haven't checked every single one yet,
Paul.
But the ones that were plugged in to the part of the house where the fuse blew,
mm-hmm.
whatever happened must have shorted out at least one of those strands, but none of them are turned on.
No.
I know, I'm super bummed. Because there's a lot.
Yes.
I love twinkle lights. I would have them up year round.
Mm-hmm.
People wouldn't judge and frown upon it, including
mm-hmm.
my partner, who
mm-hmm.
does not love twinkle lights as much as I do. And so I am super bummed because I put them around the window and both the windows in the front of my
mm-hmm.
house, around
mm-hmm.
the front door, in the bushes, along the side, in the other bush, on the ground. They're everywhere.
Everywhere.
And I don't, I'm going to have to unplug each strand and test it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have fuses. I don't know. It's beyond my skill level, but I'm super bummed.
I understand. I put out my lights. I do all year round. I like the lights that I have out there, and I leave the twinkle lights on. And it's because when I come home, I smile when I see them.
Yeah.
And, you know, when that's just part of like, oh, I'm home. Isn't that pretty? I'm in twinkle land.
Yeah.
And then I put my garlands up, and half of the electrical strands went out.
Oh, see, it's a thing.
It's a thing. And I went, are you kidding? And so I went ahead and tried to relight them, and then I said, you know, I'm not going to try this. I don't want to try every little light bulb. So I went out and bought new ones.
Well, there you go.
They're cheaper. And at least for me, then I spent the time putting them back up again and then turning them on. And I was like, okay, now we're back to normal. But I do. I mean, you're in my home. I have lights that are on my cabinet behind me. They're up there all the time. There's another set that I will turn on all the time. Obviously, my Christmas tree does go down, but, you know, I do like the lights.
I do, too.
Yes.
They're fun.
They are.
Yeah.
So we've got holiday spirit. Now, we do have to, based on holidays, we have to kind of let everyone know what our schedule is going to be like with these shows.
Yeah. Yeah. The next few weeks will be a little funky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think next week we will record, but it's going to have a different way of getting up. It's not
right.
going to be right exactly at our time.
Right.
And it will be a recording. It will be pre-recorded. And then I think the following 2 weeks, we will have automatically pre-recorded
right.
ones that are going up.
Yeah. So next Friday, our show is on the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't actually be up and available until later Friday or Saturday.
Right.
So just keep an eye for that. And then for the rest of the month, for the rest of the year, our shows will air like normal on Fridays at 6. So that would be on the 23rd, we're doing a show on fire. And on the 30th, we're doing a show on brooms, but it'll be us talking to you from the past.
Yes. And obviously, there's no time and space in radio or in spirit.
Yeah. So, yeah, just the next few weeks with the holiday season, things will be a little different.
Yes, they will.
And then
they will.
Back to normal.
So, well, what's our normal?
Yeah, what's normal?
Well, I have to say that as a rule, my week was good.
Good.
You know, it, as I say, holiday spirit, was able to get through the passport issue that I had to deal with and, you know, some other things that came up. And I'm glad that I'm at the show because it heralds the beginning of my weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I am moving into a very busy weekend, as I've mentioned before, every year in Sebastopol. And I think this is the 22nd annual Goddess Craft Fair. And that happens, Milk and Honey is a sponsor of this event and has been basically since the beginning. So it's all women artists, it's all local business people, all women business people, and there's performances throughout the weekend and delicious food.
Ooh.
And it's fun and lots of holiday shopping happens, and we are a sponsor of the event and we'll be vending at the event.
Oh, good.
So I'll be working all weekend at this show, which will just be so much fun and super exhausting. So I'm feeling myself preparing for it and really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and tonight we have Freya.
Freya.
So I'm going to turn this part over to you because I think you have some interesting insights into the situation before we start.
Well, yes, I have some things. You know, so as I've said in the past, goddesses are totally my thing. I love deity. I love talking about deity, working with deity, all of the stuff that comes with that. And there are certain gods and goddesses that I feel more connected to than others. And Freya is one of those that I feel a connection with. We have an affinity for each other. And so there's some things about her story that we'll definitely dig more deeply into. But the first thing that I think is important to really bring to the table when we start digging into the Norse mythology is an understanding of the shifts and changes that came through Norse mythology.
Right.
And we have these two families of gods. We have the Vanir and the Aesir. And the Vanir are known as the old gods. And really, we only know three of their names. Njord, who is a god of the sea, and his twins, Freyr and Freya, brother and sister. Those are the only old gods that we know about. And there's others that are hinted at or talked about or come into stories later. But really, these three main ones are the ones that are left.
Right.
Right. Then we have the Aesir. And the Aesir are the Norse gods that most people, besides Freya, are very familiar with, like Odin and Thor and Heimdall, like the gods that we all know, the gods that are in popular culture.
Right.
If you've seen the movie Thor, you know the name Odin, you know the name Thor, you know the name Heimdall. Loki is also part of the Aesir, right? So basically, the Vanir were the gods. They were kind of how you might think of the Titans in Greek mythology. And then the Aesir came, and for years and years and years, the Aesir and the Vanir warred. And they fought, and they fought, and they fought, and they tried to win whatever landscape we're talking about, whether that is, you know, in Midgard or on Earth or in one of the other nine realms of the Norse mythology, we don't know. But they warred and warred and warred. And finally, the leaders of these two tribes came together and said, okay, clearly we are both very strong. Clearly we can't beat each other.
Right.
So let's call a truce. And so a truce was called. And the Aesir agreed to send some of their gods to be with the Vanir permanently. And the Vanir chose to send some of their gods to be with the Aesir permanently. Those gods, Njord, Freyr, and Freya.
Okay.
But basically what we're talking about is a huge cultural shift where we had a more matriarchal lineage. At least this is what we believe. This is what is thought to be true from a mythological and academic standpoint. A more matrilineal way of doing things, and then a more patriarchal way of doing things with the Aesir. The Aesir, Odin, is much more representative of patriarchal culture. It's not good, it's not bad, it's just a shift.
Right.
So understanding that Freya is different than Thor and Odin. And she was so loved and so beloved by culture that they kept her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't know if the Aesir technically won. Those gods are the ones that stuck around.
Right.
But Freya and her twin brother and her father were the ones that were part of that truce.
Mm-hmm.
So she's different. She's older than even Odin, you know, who's a pretty big player in Norse mythology.
No kidding.
The Allfather.
And it's funny because when you say this, and, you know, I did as well as I know you have, but I did a little of the research. I noticed that it is very similar to the Titans and the Olympians. And yet, I like how the Norse chose to look at it, where they did a truce, whereas in Greece and all of the area there, they just destroyed the hell out of them.
Right.
You know,
lock them in a cage.
You know, that's it. Throw them away. Get them down. Get them out. And, you know, a couple of them stayed. You know, Hecate was one of them. But I like the idea that there was sort of this truce, this understanding, and they kind of, you know, we'll trade you some of ours for some of yours.
Right. Right.
So it bonded the two groups.
Right.
Which maybe we should take that into account when we think of other cultures and countries doing that now.
Right. Yeah. You know? Now we call that hostages.
Yeah, unfortunately, again, we talk about hostages and then, you know, instead of cultural exchange.
Right. Yeah. And from a language perspective, Freya actually means lady.
Yes.
Her name is, it sounds generic, just saying lady.
Mm-hmm.
Lord is Freyr, her twin, and lady. So clearly this is a, you know, when you can take a goddess down to a root word that is so all-encompassing, you know that this was a powerhouse energy that represented something much bigger than what we might be familiar with.
Right.
And, you know, a lot like Aphrodite, Freya can sometimes be dismissed as that sex goddess.
Right, right.
There's so much more to her than that.
Well, definitely. I mean, obviously we are going to start digging into where she comes into the different aspects, but she encompasses, you know, two aspects, love and death.
Mm-hmm.
She encompasses the concepts and the realities of craftsmanship and the different aspects of life that are part of a bigger picture. She is really, as you say, the ultimate, quote, lady, air quotes.
Right, right.
That we would call the Earth Mother, the Great Mother, the aspect that is the Great Feminine.
Right.
So,
right.
And I know that we have different names she goes by, and there are different aspects. So it's reminded me of Isis of the, 10,000 names?
Yes, Lady of 10,000.
Lady of 10,000 names. Mm-hmm. This is, I was going down and I was reading and I was finding it and I was thinking, wow.
Yes.
You know, and each one has a different meaning or a different aspect.
Right.
Right.
So, yeah, she has many names. And, again, this is one of those things we need to keep in mind. Anytime you start to connect to a goddess or learn about a goddess, learning about the culture she comes from, is important.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Norse, we're looking at not just Norway.
Yes.
But, you know, Greenland, Iceland, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ancestors of all of these places.
Mm-hmm.
Freya shows up in all of these places and by different names and different energetics. And the one place she doesn't show up is in Germany, but there is Frigga.
Uh-huh.
Many people sort of layer these two goddesses over each other.
Right.
So there may be some overlap there. We can't ever know what our ancestors were doing, but it would make some sense.
Uh-huh.
There is some overlap between these two goddesses that do have some familial sameness.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But understanding we are looking at fast, far regions. It's not like these folks were 20 minutes away from each other. They were there are hundreds of miles away from each other. And so we've taken all of these wide and varying things and put them into a net and called that big sack of information Freya.
Right.
You know, so you have to keep all of that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's true about any goddess.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take it all with a grain of salt and think of how big is that culture? How wide, how many villages are we talking about? Because each one's going to have their own flavor, their own spin, their own ways of worship.
Right.
And it can get kind of muddy.
Yeah, and we can discuss now what she looks like.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, go for it.
Well, it is, and who knows if this is ancient or
more modern.
Or more modern. But, you know, think of a strong Nordic woman.
Mm-hmm.
Tall, long blonde hair. Most often she's seen blonde.
Mm-hmm.
Strong and sturdy. So this, you know, this isn't a little
fluffy bunny,
you know, waify woman. This
right.
is a strong woman. She was a warrior.
Right.
She knew how to use weapons. You can't, you know, I have a very large sword that is dedicated to Freya, and it is so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I need two hands to hold it up.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine what it takes to be a warrior and how strong you have to be and what a
right.
body would look like.
Right.
Freya.
Right.
Strong.
Right.
Strong.
And I know that she had a cloak.
Yes.
A feathered cloak of falcon feathers.
Right.
I know that that kind of rang a bell for me in another way, but it was like, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
So,
and this is a shape-shifting
mm-hmm.
cloak, right?
Mm-hmm.
She puts on the cloak and can turn into a falcon.
Right.
And she lets Loki and Thor use this cloak when they need to
mm-hmm.
do some reconnaissance over with the ice giants.
Right.
Right.
There you go.
She also is connected to cats.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Her chariot is pulled by cats.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. I was looking at that going, cats.
Yeah.
That's again, you know, we go again to the family, cat friendly, but then you consider that they're also big cats.
Right.
I don't think of them as little fluffy kitties. I think of them like more tigers or, you know, the bigger
yeah.
animals.
Well, if you think about the location,
mm-hmm.
the cold,
mm-hmm.
this isn't, you know, Sophie, my house cat.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big, beefy, strong cat that
mm-hmm.
can survive in the cold and the ice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of like, oh, and, you know, she obviously also has the other part is the boar.
Yep.
Which is interesting because when I do get the picture up on Facebook, I actually have a boar skull.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I found that. And I have it dedicated to Hecate in the sense that Hecate also has, you know, boar energy. But she kind of said, it's okay, give it, my sister can use it kind of a thing.
How interesting. My family found a boar head.
Oh.
Out randomly
uh-huh.
on a walk. And they came back and got me so that I, because I'm, you know, the one that doesn't mind through picking through gross things.
Oh, yes.
And I was only able to get the jaw, but I have a boar's jaw.
Oh.
That's for Freya.
Oh, wow.
Sure.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is, I came across a lot of things when I, you know, when you get started, I think your enthusiasm,
yeah.
you know, sort of takes on all of the, you know, the out and about kind of a thing.
Right.
So.
And the connection with the boar is actually quite interesting because she falls in love with a human.
Oh, I didn't.
And turns him into a boar so that he can cross through the realm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there's this interesting, again, because she can sometimes be simplified to this goddess of sex, that she was having sex with animals, right? It's a way to bastardize the
yeah.
story.
Yeah.
And it was her magic that was able to transform him so he could travel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's part of her connection with the boar.
Right. And she also is the mistress of magic.
Yes.
Which, you know, as you said before, Odin being the next, the patriarchal, he learned all this magic from her. She was, you know, mm-hmm. the one who knew all magic. It wasn't just, oh, a little bit, all magic. So I was really taken by the fact that they said learned it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't necessarily say stole it.
Right.
So it was a understanding, but it was also respect for where this information was coming from.
Right. And that's a cultural importance
mm-hmm.
as well, because in the Norse culture, men didn't do magic.
Mm-hmm.
Men, there's a trance technique, a journeying technique called cider, and
mm-hmm.
it's pronounced seether, cider, depending on what country you're coming
mm-hmm.
from. Cider is Norwegian. And that's my ancestry, so I choose to call it cider.
Mm-hmm.
But that was women's work.
Mm-hmm.
Men didn't do that work.
Mm-hmm.
And Odin learned how to do cider. Odin
mm-hmm.
was able to cross between gender and flow between gender. There's a lot of gender bending that
right.
happens in Norse mythology. And Freya is the one that opened the door and taught Odin how to do the women's magic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Freya is also, you know, to expand on the gender concept, Freya also helped Thor disguise himself as a woman so that he could go and do some rescue work over with the ice giants.
Mm-hmm.
Ice giants are constantly causing problems.
Well, when you're in a very, you know, cold climate, I think, like that, it would be something that would be part of your mythology.
Right, absolutely.
You know, in terms of that. But, yeah, those poor ice giants, they just, you know, misunderstood.
Oh, poor ice giants.
Yeah.
But there's a lot with not only the what we would consider the manly men,
mm-hmm.
Thor and Odin,
uh-huh.
Doing these things that were considered quote-unquote women's work or
mm-hmm.
the women's mysteries,
mm-hmm.
but also Freya being the catalyst.
Right.
Freya being the bridge and
right.
showing and teaching and giving them that information. Clearly, Freya was a good trade.
Right, right.
Before, right?
Definitely. And from what I was reading, the cross-dressing, they had to, shamans in the tradition of trance and trance work and the magical aspects of traveling through the realms, part of this was that if they were going to do this in that time, not necessarily modern time, they would have to cross-dress as a female to do that.
Right.
Which
right.
fascinated me because, you know, that is where some information about taking on more feminine energy, being able to hold the feminine energy,
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that you are not a male, but holding the feminine energy
right.
at the time you're working is really, really strong and powerful and says, we honor that.
Yeah.
It's important.
Right.
Rather than,
right.
Eh.
And also, I have one of my elders and someone I've taken some classes with is a Sami, which
oh, yes.
is the indigenous spiritual tradition. And the only place that they're left is in Finland.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sami, which is S-A-A-M-I, Sami,
mm-hmm.
they used to be all over
mm-hmm.
Scandinavia. They've kind of receded and receded and receded. But what I've learned from this teacher is that folks who were intersexed
mm-hmm.
or folks who didn't identify as the gender that their
mm-hmm.
body may present at
mm-hmm.
were considered shamans and spiritual leaders
mm-hmm.
because they had been gifted with something special.
Right.
And that is something that's been lost from the modern perspective. I think we're coming back to it.
Right.
Starting to understand the fluidity of gender.
Right.
But it was something that was quite revered and respected,
mm-hmm.
by,
mm-hmm.
at least by these cultures.
Right. Now, and that, again, we can kind of draw a little line over to the Native American culture because the Heyoka,
mm.
which, of course, is trickster, but, again, it comes to the same thing, is that they were cross-dresser in a lot of their energies, and when they would do shaman work, which wasn't called shaman work, obviously, with the Native Americans, that was another thread of
right.
showing it. So, basically, I think with Freya and her ability with enchantment and magic and the different aspects flows really into her sexuality.
Right.
And the magic of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And how that becomes the part of her own ability, as you say, claiming
right.
her power and her femininity and her sexuality.
Right, right. So the story of Freya that is most well known, that is most common, is the story of the Brisingamen.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this beautiful necklace, this beautiful amber necklace that Freya just fell in love with and wanted so badly. But the only way that she could do it was to convince these four dwarves
mm-hmm.
to sleep with her. And I am very much simplifying this story just because, from a timing perspective, there's a lot we want to talk about. But
right.
So basically, you know, Loki's involved, of course. But all of these things happen, and Freya ends up getting these four dwarves to agree they can each have sex with her, and this must happen in a very specific timeline,
mm-hmm.
and then they will gift her this beautiful necklace.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear the story, it sounds like, wow, what a petty woman
mm-hmm.
who's willing to sell her body for a piece of jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this piece of the story that is often not in some of these modern tellings.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the modern tellings are quite ugly and triggering.
Mm-hmm.
They make it seem like Freya was violently attacked. They make it seem like she is sexually assaulted. They can get quite graphic.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something interesting about Norse mythology, and if you only know the surface, you won't know this extra piece.
Right.
right? And that is, in the Norse system, the world is held up by four dwarves, and it represents the four elements. When I've been in Norse ritual, when they call the corners, they call these specific four dwarves
mm-hmm.
by name and invite
mm-hmm.
them into the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so Freya has to go through a sexual initiation with each of the elements in
mm-hmm.
order to achieve an object of power. That doesn't sound like a terrible idea to me. That sounds pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a woman who is stepping into power and
right.
connecting with elemental forces physically.
Right.
That's becoming a goddess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we go over to Ishtar, and we go to Inanna,
mm-hmm.
Inanna specifically, the descent of Inanna. Yes, it was a descent, and it was removing things.
Right.
But that is another initiation.
But Inanna is also a goddess who wasn't ashamed of her sexuality.
Exactly.
There are poems dedicated to the courtship of Inanna and Dumuzi and mm-hmm. how they make love to each other with some graphic detail in these ancient poems, you know?
Right.
So I think that this culture, there was a respect and an understanding that of women's sovereignty,
mm-hmm.
of sexuality that wasn't diminished, that
right.
wasn't shameful.
Right.
You know, it
right.
wasn't something to hide.
And again, we look at the same thing, the same theme as when one set of rules is changed
mm-hmm.
and another is put into implementation. There is a way of trying to lower the first one
right.
just enough to gain an upper hand in the power structure.
Right.
And obviously the telling or retelling of the story in less empowering way
mm-hmm.
is a way to bring that power structure down so the others can rise above it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we can go into, and we do on different times, the different gods, goddesses, and cultures. But here, I listen to that, and I think, wow, it is an initiation. And to achieve a object of power, and
mm-hmm.
okay, it could be a sword, it could have been anything.
Right.
But she's got, you know, a necklace, and torques were very popular in
mm-hmm.
for men as well in other cultures. So necklaces aren't exactly
right.
just feminine. But
no, and they're status symbols.
Yes.
And amber specifically is a status symbol. It
mm-hmm.
it was currency. It was wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, oh, I want this pretty thing because
mm-hmm.
it will look sparkly on my finger. It's,
right.
It's something that shows your status. It shows how much rank you have.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so it was a object of power, not just a pretty thing.
Right. Right.
And so that presents you with her energies
mm-hmm.
are one of that process. And it's, you know, petitioning and fertility.
Right.
The things that were part of sexuality.
Right.
But it was, again, the empowerment process, not the de-empowered.
Right. And it's an interesting balance that fertility you mentioned
mm-hmm.
also, because we have a woman, a feminine
mm-hmm.
a feminine energetic with Freya, who represents sexuality, whose twin brother, Freyr, is agriculture
mm-hmm.
and the plants growing and
mm-hmm.
the fertility of animals.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this interesting thing we often, especially modern paganism, we reverse those things.
Yes.
Right? The god, the more masculine aspect is that driving sexual
mm-hmm.
force, and the feminine aspect is the things that grow and the
mm-hmm.
animals and the forest and the crops.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Norse mythology, these two twins hold that reverse what
right.
might be normal, quote unquote, for some modern
right.
pagans.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It brings to mind, and I know this is probably off track of Freya, but it brings to mind a very short-lived, which of course it would be, TV series called All That Glitters by Norman Lear. And in that, it was a total female-dominated structure. It was modern-day, was cultural, corporate structures, but all of the power structures were female, all of the high-ranking and all of the ways, and the men were the secretaries, and they were the ones that got, you know, the coffee, and they were the ones that were looked at. And this was in the early 1980s.
Yeah.
So it was, again, a part of that revolution, but it was very funny because it was just like it triggered like a memory
mm.
of something.
The role reversal.
The role reversal.
Yeah.
And it had been, again, started in terms of where, you know, our modern culture
right.
is. but
I've never heard of it.
You'll have to look at it. It was short-lived, but was Norman Lear. He definitely got on the leading edge of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but and then not only does she wind up with fertility, and she winds up with enchantment, and she has magic. And we will talk, I think, more about her other aspect after the break, which is her death aspect.
Right.
Which, of course, has a whole section of working.
Right. And that's, you know, that's the two sides of the coin, the sex and death.
And isn't sex and orgasm supposed to be the little death?
Right. Yes, I know. That is true.
So, I mean, there is a sort of a sense of that.
Yeah.
So I think that our break is probably close upon us.
Yeah, I think we have about 5 minutes.
Well, what more can we discuss about Freya before we leave for our little bit of a break?
Well, what I would add is that most of the information we have about Norse mythology comes from just basically two sources, the poetic Edda and the prose Edda. And you can find that these books pretty much anywhere. They're not hard to get a hold of. Depending on the translation, you may get a really old English translation where the language can be harder to understand. And you can get a very modern translation where it's written in completely modern English and it's very easy to understand. The difference is you do lose something.
Yeah.
Even in the old English translation, think of what you've lost from the original Norwegian translation.
Right.
You know, what have you. And most of these stories come from Iceland. The stories, the mythology from Norway and from Sweden is not, it's lost. Iceland was able to retain their oral tradition longer than any of the other Norse cultures. So most of the stories, the prose Edda and the poetic Eddas, come from Iceland. So keep that in mind as well. You know, there is a lot of crossover, but you have to take it all with a grain.
Well, in translations, you do. You lose even in translations of Greek, the different Greek versions.
Well, look at all the translations of the Bible. How much information has been lost or intentionally changed from language to language.
Right. Yeah. So, and we also must mention that her day is Friday, which is today.
That's right.
Yes.
Hey. Nice.
So we were doing Freya on Friday. Sounds like a slogan.
There is one story I want to make sure I read it correctly. Freya often gets angry in some of these stories, or someone pushes her buttons and she fights back. She's not really known for just sitting and taking it or pouting or anything like that. She fights back. But there's one story where Freya gets very angry and the halls begin to shake and her necklace falls off. And this is when Loki steals it, but that's a whole other story. So here I have two quotes from two different translations of the poetic Edda, right? So in the Benjamin Thorpe translation, what he writes is, "Know of me to be of woman of the lewdest. If we were thee, I would drive to Jotunheim, the land of the ice giants." So that's Benjamin Thorpe's translation. Henry Adam Bellow's translation, this is the exact same line. This is his version. "Most lustful indeed should I look to all if I journeyed with thee to the giant's home." Right?
Right.
It's kind of saying the same thing.
Right.
But it's, one is much more clear and understandable. And who knows what else we've lost from that one sentence. And some of it is also completely lost because pages were lost or ripped or wet or whatever as translations happened. So there are some where it says original source unavailable or whatever when you're reading through.
When you're reading through because it can't be. Well, and you look at any kind of written translations and anything or written records that either are destroyed by fire or water or, you know, any number of things.
Right.
So, of course, this is you've got a fair amount of information.
And you get these historians who do these translations who also put in what they believe it could be.
Right.
So that's also, you know, doing research on the version of the prose Edda that you pick up and knowing who that historian is and
what
is he worth it.
Right. What was his take on, you know, culture and the traditions of matriarchy, patriarchy, things of that nature.
Right. And there is a lot. Snorri Snorrason, I think, is the name of the gentleman who did most of these translations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of conflicting information out there about
mm-hmm.
him,
mm-hmm.
what his true goals were and how much of this he totally made up. And we just don't know.
Right.
We just don't know.
Well, that kind of goes to some of the more pagan traditions that are also written about
yeah.
and talked about
right.
and things like that. So, okay.
Awesome.
So,
great.
Here we go.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candelo's Corner with Candelo Camisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silos League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Bit of Boxu with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Western, Saturdays 5 to 7, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
We are back from our break.
Hey.
Okay, so now we get to talk about Freya and her death aspect.
Right.
So, obviously, she is the mistress of the Valkyries.
Right.
And works with, you know, the concept of taking the slain warrior. She gets her first pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ones that are the best.
Right. And, you know, remembering that this culture that Freya was worshipped by, they were warriors. It was
mm-hmm.
a warrior culture. And they were also farmers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not all of them went and fought. People stayed home and took care of the land.
Right.
But a lot of what they did was leaving and fighting and coming back with
mm-hmm.
with the spoils of war.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of rules about what it was to be a good warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And that translated to what it was to be a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, like you find in many cultures across the planet still, when guests come, they must be treated a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain things that you must do in order to be considered a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're off murdering and killing people, there are certain things that you
yeah.
do to be considered a good person.
Right.
There was, you know, I often think of in the Arthurian legends, the Knight's Code.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a very strict and strong code, and you can read some of the code in the Eddas as
mm-hmm.
well, like what was required, what is necessary, what are your responsibilities.
Right.
So the good warriors were prime.
Mm-hmm.
They were what you wanted,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's believed by our ancestors from this region of the world that everything was getting ready for the end of days,
mm-hmm.
for Ragnarok.
Right.
Right? When the world ends, everything is going to end in fire and ice. It's going to be a big, huge battle. So everything is in preparation for that big, huge battle.
Right.
And we know that Odin is in charge of Valhalla. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where the slain warriors go, and they get to drink mead and
mm-hmm.
carouse and tell stories and practice fighting for Ragnarok. But not all of those slain warriors make it to Valhalla. The first pick, the very best warriors, Freya gets.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes them back to her hall, which is called, it's Folkvanger, and her hall is called Sessrumnir.
It's easy for you to say.
Not really. I have to look and make sure that I am saying it right.
I let her say this because I know she has better knowledge of her own ancestry.
So there's something, you know, a badass woman warrior,
mm-hmm.
the leader of the Valkyries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she joins the ranks of the warrior women, the
mm-hmm.
Valkyries, and she gets to pick the first fallen. There's it's believed that Odin and Freya would fight together
mm-hmm.
at the end of days.
Mm-hmm.
But why did they split up the Warriors then? You know, it's interesting things to think and to question.
Right, right.
And to ask her, if you decide you want to start working with Freya, she'll show up. Freya loves humans.
Mm-hmm.
And she is super excited when people come to her door. She is very easy to work with.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to be worshipped.
Mm-hmm.
She wants people to reconnect with her.
Mm-hmm.
So she, of all of the goddesses that I've connected with, she shows up like that.
Would you like to tell, because you did tell me this, about the statue that is at Milk and Honey of Freya?
Yes, there is a statue at Milk and Honey of Freya that we've had for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, statues, they always wait for the right person to
mm-hmm.
come and pick them up. But this particular statue has been in some rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Because we often have things that happen in the shop once the shop closes, like coven meetings or goddess workshops. And so this statue has actually been used more than once for Freya.
Mm-hmm.
And we've left offerings at this statue for Freya. And so I think that she wants to stay in the shop because she knows that she's going to get offerings
right.
and honored and worshipped via this particular vehicle, this
mm-hmm.
statue.
Mm-hmm.
But she, you know, because I do work with her frequently, I can feel her now. Like,
yeah.
Hello. Oh, you're talking about me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, here are some more things you should tell them. You know? She really loves it.
Right.
So I find she's a good goddess to connect to if you have mm-hmm. a hard time working with deity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was interesting. I work also as a reader at Milk and Honey on Saturday. And, you know, this is a beautiful statue, and it's been there for, you know, a little bit of time.
Well, wow.
And but other statues, even of Freya, have
yeah.
come and gone.
Yes.
And that's why I was, you know, kind of chuckling about when you talk about, you know, offerings and things, and you mentioned something. So, but as a warrioress, I'm fascinated that she is so strong in who she is. It is not, I am a wussy little female.
Mm-hmm.
It is that she takes her empowerment, not just as a spiritual being, but as a physical manifestation. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you go out and, you know, in this tradition, in this culture, yeah, going out and fighting all the time
sure.
is part of it.
Yeah.
But
you have to back up your, you got to
yeah.
walk your talk.
You got to walk your talk.
Yeah.
It's not quite the same as going out and, you know, learning Kung Fu and a few other things
yeah.
and walking the streets and try to beat up people because you're showing how tough you are. They call that gangs, actually.
Yeah, we don't need that.
We don't need that. But she is, the sense I get is that they show her, and it's interesting, the two statues that I have seen is the one with the feathered robe, but then there's another one with her more scantily clad, but it's mostly the fact that she's got all these weapons that
yeah.
she's hanging out with.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is, you know, because it's the two sides. So her side of holding the death energy, the slain warriors, but the warriors that are to be brought back again,
right? Right.
Is, you know, the process. And she's training, and if I'm going to take my own personal take on this, is that it's kind of like she's dealing with them from the female strength point of view, while Odin is doing it from the male strength. So it's like
right.
you get the best of both sides.
Right. Right. And there is a long history across cultures
mm-hmm.
of women warriors training
mm-hmm.
the hero, the,
mm-hmm.
the quote-unquote male hero
right.
to save the day.
Right.
That happens all over the place.
Right.
Mythology.
Right.
And the other thing about Freya, is what brought her to this warrior place, what brought her to join the Valkyries, was the loss of her husband.
Mm-hmm.
She had, her husband's name is Od,
mm-hmm.
O-D, and it's one of those O's with a thingy on the top.
Yeah,
and,
a little
yeah.
weird thing.
Yeah. And sometimes it's written as O-D-R, and again, it's not a D, it's a little
mm-hmm.
thingy. But they have two children, two beautiful daughters, and then he disappears. He goes to fight the war against the Aesir.
Mm-hmm.
And he never returns.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many stories of Freya sobbing amber tears.
Mm-hmm.
And amber is often called Freya's tears.
Mm-hmm.
In Norse mythology, especially in the Sami tradition,
mm-hmm.
they still do this practice of yoiking.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look it up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this sing-song poetry
mm-hmm.
where they change a word into something that's more lyrical. So instead
mm-hmm.
of saying amber, you say Freya's tears,
mm-hmm.
right? And they do this with all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So it's like hidden language. It's poetry. Mm. It's magical incantation.
Mm-hmm.
And Freya is connected to all of this because of the amber and because of the crying, the trail of amber to go and try and find and
mm-hmm.
locate her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Ode.
Mm-hmm.
And some historians question whether Ode is another aspect of Odin.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
Right.
Some people say yes. Some people say no.
Right.
I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other. Sometimes I could be easily swayed that it is
mm-hmm.
Odin, who shows up as a million different characters in the stories, but it feels different.
It may be an older version,
mm-hmm.
you know, before the Asian cultures, the invasion
mm-hmm.
coming in took something. And that was maybe the dynamics that in actuality happened, as opposed to, you know, what they write about, is that it was an incorporation from
right.
another. Because some, just like we talk about goddesses, sometimes they are incorporated. Sometimes we lose things from certain groups and cultures as the other ones that are, you know, what the ones that are vanquished and the ones that are the conquerors.
Right.
And I think that this particular structure of the Nordic tradition is much more involved with prowess of power, but not power in a negative sense, but just power.
Mm-hmm.
I am a powerful person. I'll go out and plow my fields. I'm a powerful person. I'm going to go out and slay my enemies, kind of a thing. But it's about that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to say, we are powerful women, and we'll go out and slay what we have to slay to get what we need, whether it's, you know, a job we have to do, or, you know, something in our home that we have to fix.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I think that Freya has this, and in this death aspect, it was what I got a feel for is that it wasn't about, you know, collecting the souls like some of the other death goddesses. She
right.
was dealing with warriors. She was
yeah.
dealing with these people that were slain in a battle that was
yeah.
showing, you know, for their empowerment of what they needed to go get.
Right, right,
so,
right. It's not the psychopomp energy.
Right.
Right. It's not the goddess who's helping the souls move from this realm to the next.
Right.
It's taking those warriors that will benefit her later
uh-huh.
and keeping them in uh-huh. training.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, as I was telling Phoenix when before we started, is that author who basically does for young adults, Rick Riordan did Percy Jackson and the version of the Greek gods. He's written another section called Magnus Chase, and he's basically it's the Nords, the Nordic tradition of the gods of Valhalla. And he had in this one particular book, is like the beginning, he talks about this young man learning all about his background and the gods, and he was taken technically in a battle, but he was taken before he really was killed. So it was technically not really the right thing for them to do.
Right.
But the Valkyrie, of course, did that, one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, his whole story unfolds, and you kind of go, wow. But they talk about Freya and Odin and all the different things.
I love it.
Yeah.
When gods make it into
regular
yeah,
literature.
Modern stuff. Yeah.
But so we have, and the Valkyrie, from what I was able to, I didn't do a lot of Valkyrie stuff because I wanted to stay with Freya, but they were basically the original priestesses of an oracular order.
Right.
And so that made Freya the head priestess, the high priestess of this group. And, of course, prophecy is another part of her.
Right. Prophecy is the cider.
Yeah.
It's the cider of going into the other realm and finding the answers and bringing them back.
Right.
They're ancient, and I believe this still happens, at least according to my elder, who's
mm-hmm.
from the Sami tradition. This still happens, but there would be traveling bands of priestesses, basically,
mm-hmm.
and they would go from village to village to village, and the villagers would feed them and
mm-hmm.
then give them lodging for one, two, or three nights.
Mm-hmm.
And while they were there, these priestesses would do cider rituals where they would channel. They
mm-hmm.
would go into the other realm. They would do prophecy
mm-hmm.
and oracular work and tell the village what they needed to know about the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would gather their things and move on to the next village. And this is how they made their living. This is
right.
how they survived.
Wow.
By traveling and doing prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because of that, when they moved into the next level, which was the Valkyrie being with the ones that were gathering the souls mm-hmm. of the warriors, I was kind of like going, well, in a strange way, I can understand moving from that part of prophecy to actually gathering the warriors that would come to pass in the next round mm-hmm. of initiational physical realms.
Well, and once you have the prophecy, once you know Ragnarok is coming, right,
mm-hmm.
now what? Well, I guess I better get ready for this shit.
Right, right.
You know, so now the Valkyries have determined Ragnarok is coming. We better start collecting the warriors so that we're ready when shit hits the fan, you know.
Right.
And the if you find yourself attracted to Freya or called to work with her, and you find yourself a little bit more drawn to that warrior energy, that fighting energy, that part of this goddess, you might also consider looking into the Valkyries and learning more about them, because there are specific names, there are specific energies. Each one is kind of in charge of a different thing,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like the archangels in a way.
Right, right.
And it's very interesting, you know, just mm-hmm. from a intellectual standpoint, it's super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely worth looking into, especially if that warrior energy is appealing.
Right, yeah. Right. Because that, again, Freya has a lot of facets that mm-hmm. are more. When I started, I was kind of going, oh, this is another Hera kind of thing. And not that Hera doesn't, I apologize because I have a statue of her over there.
Dude, Hera doesn't like that at all.
No, it's kind of like, no. But it was the kind of thing that she deals in a different culture with a different set of rules and the way she functions than what she was before. But Freya has a whole different level, and she's also different than Aphrodite.
Yes, very much.
Which, you know, to me is like, because what I have seen and what people have spoken of and how they treat her is totally different than what I've been reading and what comes up in terms of the information of who she really is.
Well, and we've talked about this virtually every show.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to look at ancient and modern.
Right.
You know, and what have we done from a modern paganism perspective, from a modern witchcraft perspective? Have we improved this story? Have we dumbed it down?
Mm-hmm.
And we have a tendency to put things in boxes and to have things correspond and fit together.
Right.
You know, of course it's lovely if there's this goddess who's the same as this goddess who's the same as that goddess, and it shows this universality, but that's not always the case.
No.
So when we try to squeeze these goddesses together, it's not puzzle pieces. They don't fit together like that. And Aphrodite and Freya are not the same.
No, not at all.
Any stretch of the imagination, no.
But you can go with Persephone and Freya have a similar point of reference, and not in the virginal sense, but the story of, you know, what they do and, you know, they're the queen of the underworld or they're the queen of the dead or whatever.
Right, right.
But they have threads. They all have threads. They're not identical.
No.
But they have threads of similarity.
Right.
And I think as long as we treat them with, you're all women, you all have aspects of, and, you know, this kind of works in what you were doing in your culture, and this works in what you were doing in your culture.
Right.
I mean,
right.
There's a difference. I mean, look at the weather. You had to be strong. You had to be able to fight the elements in the Nordic tradition. And, you know, southern Italy, no, I don't think so.
Right.
You know, you got a little bit of, I don't think they have, well, they might have snow like on the top of the mountain, but I don't think they were really into that. I mean, as far as I can tell.
Right.
But so you have a different kind of way that the energy gets manifested.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, if you're a person who is working on healing some wounds around sexuality,
mm-hmm.
if you are someone who works in the sex industry, if you are someone who wants to be more sexual,
mm-hmm.
if you are someone who wants to step more into feeling like a warrior, if you need to embrace both of those parts of yourself
mm-hmm.
at the same time, or one or the other,
mm-hmm.
Freya is a really good goddess
mm-hmm.
to start working with.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, she shows up, and she shows up easy.
Mm-hmm.
She's eager, and she wants to work with us. So of all of the goddesses we could possibly talk about, I feel like she's the closest within reach for most of us.
Right.
And, you know, set up an altar for her.
Mm-hmm.
Find a beautiful image that on the internet or a statue. I have one that's really juicy, full of Freya's energy. Email me. No, but, you know, she wants flowers. Mm-hmm. She wants chocolates. Mm-hmm. She wants incense burned for her. Mm-hmm. She wants you to listen, and she will talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel setting up an altar and starting to connect with a goddess, Freya is a really good one. She will welcome you with open arms, and she will show you, especially women. She's not opposed to working with men. She loves men.
Mm-hmm.
But especially women or folks who are trying to do some healing around their power and their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good goddess to start reaching out to.
She's very intriguing for me. And I think that when we decided we were going to do this goddess, I looked at it and I'm going, well, I really don't have that much knowledge of her, and yet I did know that Phoenix did, and in more than one way.
Yeah.
She's, you know, taught it. She's got her notes and her understanding. So, but it put me in perspective.
Yeah.
It really gave me another view of what I have heard and what we've seen depicted in stories or films or whatever, mm-hmm. and what really is on the real being.
Right.
It was just like, whoa,
yeah,
you know. So that kind of made me feel a whole lot better.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So. Well, I highly encourage folks to, you know, go right now, whatever you're doing, stop, go to the store, get some mead.
And drink it.
And go home and pour her a glass and toast to her. And I bet you tonight you'll have some crazy dreams.
Oh, my gosh.
She will be super stoked that you called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the dear, beautiful friend that you haven't spoken to in months, and you call and you just spend hours and hours on the phone.
Catching up.
She will be like that.
Yes. Well, I definitely think that this has been a very good education for me, and I appreciate it. And I hope that everyone has enjoyed our banter and our information.
Yeah. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we are 2 weeks into December.
Yeah.
So things are wrapping up, and our next few shows will be a little different. So we have some pre-recorded things coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So next week our show won't air at its regular time. Yes, as Alan points out, this is our last live show of 2016.
Oh, my gosh.
There will be more shows of 2016.
Yes, and there will be more shows in 2017.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So stay tuned to our Facebook page or the website to get the exact air time of next week's show, which will be about the winter solstice.
And then from there we go to Fire and Broom.
Yes.
Broom.
And then it's 2017.
And who knows what we'll be doing then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have a wonderful time. Blessings to all.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.